Hello and welcome to the Thursday, January 9th, 2014 edition of the Sands and the Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm the recording from Jacksonville, Florida. We got an interesting story today to start out with. Kevin wrote it up in a diary, but really a lot of thanks to Peter for allowing us to share some of these details. The reason I think this story is in particular interesting is I've heard it a couple times before, but nobody ever really allowed me to sort of share sufficient details about how this scam really works. So this is really one of those things where it's helpful to have someone actually come forward and allow us to share the important parts, at least, of what's happening here to many businesses. They're kind of used to stories that involve malware, where a company is being raided, for example, by having SUSE installed on an accountant's computer. This scam works a little bit different in that it really has more sort of a social engineering aspect to it. Essentially, what's happening here is that the attacker first gains access to the email that this particular company sends and receives. This may be via malware on computers, mail servers, or in some cases it may just be as simple as adding a forwarding rule, for example, to a Gmail account. So the Gmail account's password may get lost. The attacker now doesn't just go in and changes the password or sends spam from the account, but instead adds a simple forward rule. So now the attacker receives a copy of all email being sent and received by this account. What's happening next is that the attacker usually sits back and waits and listens essentially to the conversations for keywords, for example, for bill payments and such. And then the attacker interjects usually only one simple message, updating the payment information. Like in this case, there was actually a business relationship between these two companies. So to the accountant, it wasn't really all that obvious that the company they had an order placed with all of a sudden sent an email saying, hey, could you please change the account number that we are using? We changed banks and we are now using a different routing number and account number. However, in this case, Peter here was kind of lucky that his accountant paid attention and realized, hey, this is going to an offshore account, probably not legit, and didn't follow these instructions. The attacker actually went through quite a bit of pain. For example, they even registered a domain name that's very similar to the domain name that was involved. We have it here as an example. This wasn't the actual domain name, but just to illustrate how similar these domain names were. If you think that the original domain name was google.us, then the fake domain name would be google-us.com. So something that can happen. A lot of companies have multiple domain names just like that. I think there are a couple of defensive lessons to be learned from this incident. First of all, don't trust email. Email is an insecure medium. Even without changing the domain name, it may have been possible, depending on how the mail servers are configured, for the attacker just to spoof the domain name of the original sender. And then, of course, make it as hard as possible for an attacker to gain access to your email, audit your email configuration regularly, and make it hard for an attacker to spoof email from your domain, so they at least have to register a lookalike domain name. Like I said, this is not the first time I've seen this, just the first time that we really can talk about it in quite a bit of detail. This mostly affects companies or corporate accounts, and as a result, there can be quite a bit of money lost in these attacks. I've heard of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars being lost in individual attacks here. Also, it does defeat some of the sort of human checking that a bank may do. For example, when I recently bought a house and had to wire a substantial amount of money, the bank called me and verified whether I really wanted to do that and whether the account numbers are correct. Well, if I would trust this email, then I would agree with the bank that this is the right amount of money, the right account number, so all of these additional checks fail. Now, how would an attacker ever get access to your email password? Well, maybe you reused the password, or maybe not you, but some user within your organization did. And we have yet another forum breach, and this time it's the OpenSUSE forum. But according to OpenSUSE, this time passwords did not get lost because they were not stored within the application. Instead, OpenSUSE did use the NetIQ Access Manager in order to control access to its forum, which meant that in the forum database there were actually only just some random data in order to fill the space in the database column. Email addresses, however, did get leaked. And the X.org project found and fixed a buffer overflow in its code that was probably 23 years old. So for the last 23 years, this software had this vulnerability. And this is not software that's very obscure or such. Pretty much all Unix, BSD-based operating systems use X.org code in some way. Now, this code was a part of the font processing features, which of course also Windows had actually a lot of issues with processing fonts. And it was found using a static source code analysis. CPP check is the tool they used to do that, particularly for open source code, which probably has been reviewed in some way. It's interesting to see that static code analysis using automated tools is still valuable and does give you decent results. Well, that's it for today. So thanks again for listening and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.